This is a statistic that is not new. This has floated around for a long time, but about 40 to 50% of American marriages end in divorce. And here's some more information that is a little bit newer than that. It says that among almost all age groups, the majority of Americans believe that cohabitation is a good idea, even if the couple doesn't intend on marrying. Now, we might hear statistics like this, and for some reason or another, we're kind of driven to think about younger people. Maybe it's younger people who are doing all the divorcing. Maybe it's the younger people who are doing all of the shacking up together. Cohabitation is the nice word for that, but that's really what it is. People just moving in and living together. And we might be mindful of young people when we think that, but there's something that is happening in our society now that kind of changes our thinking about statistics like this. Like, for instance, what they call gray divorce over the last 30 years has almost doubled. And here's what they mean when they say gray divorce. People who are either over the age of 50 or people who have been married for 30 plus years. Think about that for a minute. I'll let you figure out why they call it gray divorce, but it's people over the age of 50 divorcing or marriages that have lasted for 30 plus years. Think about that. In the last 30 years almost, that number has doubled. So when we're thinking about what's going on in society with marriage and with people living together, we're thinking about something that encompasses really all age groups. Like, for instance, almost all age groups, the majority believe cohabitation is a good idea. That's a strongly held belief among older people. And in some groups, it's as high as 78% are thinking that way. And I think, if anything, what this information tells us is that you and I live in a time, we live in a place in which there's a very low, very distorted view of what the marriage relationship is. Do you see that in these statistics, that marriage is not esteemed very highly? And when you start looking at those who were married and divorced, you start looking at why those people divorced. Here are the top 10 reasons, as of pretty recently, why people say they got divorced. They say we got divorced because we just couldn't get along, or because of money problems, or a lack of intimacy, or control struggles, a lack of communication, infidelity, weight gain, jealousy, parental interference, and unrealistic expectations. Those are the main reasons why people who are divorcing say they're getting a divorce. And hopefully, when you and I look at lists like this and information from the previous screen, hopefully what we see is a lot of worldliness there. We see that's kind of a worldly idea, and in most of these reasons, you see there's some worldliness there. And I think that's true, but what I want to suggest is that you and I, none of us, are really immune to thinking like this. I think about our young people that are listening this morning. If you are not taught differently, the most natural thing will be for you to just adopt the view of the people around you. Isn't that what typically happens? You tend to adopt that view unless otherwise taught. And so our young people that are listening to this morning, if you're not taught differently, then you may likely adopt the views of the world when it comes to marriage, and then in turn you have that low, distorted view. And I think also about those of us who are already married. We're not immune from this kind of thinking either, just because of the sheer volume of influence around us. But I think about what happens to a married couple when some of these issues come into our marriage. You know, I would be surprised if there's a couple that's been married longer than a couple of days who could look at this list and say, you know what, we've never dealt with any of that before. I mean, can we just assume that almost everybody that's been married for any length of time has had some trouble come up into their marriage? And it may very well likely be in the top 10 reasons why people's marriage ends. And so if you've had these issues, or maybe some other issues, what you understand is that these create a real challenge in the relationship. Things that are on this list, or perhaps other things, can put a really big strain. There may be a couple here this morning who is dealing with some issues. Maybe there's something on this list that you're dealing with this morning. And if that's true, you know the strain that this puts on the marriage relationship. So what happens when the fire is gone? What happens when you feel like we've tried everything and nothing works? What happens when you feel like it would just be easier if we could just kind of go our separate ways? What happens when the marriage is just not fulfilling like it used to be? It just doesn't satisfy me like it used to be. Well, you know what very well might creep into our mind? The divorce word. The divorce word. Not because you've ever thought it was right. And not because you've ever saw your marriage going there. Not because you ever intended it for it to go there for sure. But because in the moment, under the strain, under the stress, in the challenge of the marriage, it just seems like the easiest thing to do. So can I suggest something from the very onset? Especially if you are a married couple here this morning and there are some issues within your marriage. Divorce is not the answer. Can you just say that to yourself right now? Divorce is not the answer. Here's something I would like for you to do as a couple. When we get out of here this morning, when we get in the car and the doors close, here's what I would like for you to do. If you are a couple that's struggling with your marriage right now, I want you to look at each other and I want you to have a conversation that goes something like this. I know we're having some troubles right now. And I know we've tried some things that haven't worked. I know there are some questions. I know there are some things that we're going to have to work through. But I want you to know that I'm committed to this relationship and I'm committed to you. And divorce is not going to be our answer. If you are a couple that's struggling right now in your marriage, do you see the power in just recommitting to each other? That we know there are problems. We're not denying there are problems. But we're recommitting. That's powerful. But even if you're not struggling, and I hope the majority of us are not, I hope that most people are listening to this right now thinking our marriage is in a good place. And I hope that it is. And that's exactly where we want it, right? But I want you to have a conversation too. Maybe your conversation goes something like this. Hey, things are really good right now. And I'm glad. Maybe they haven't always been good, and maybe we can anticipate in the future there may be some problems, but I want you to know, regardless of what problems we have in our marriage, I want you to know divorce is not ever going to be our option. Do you see the power for that? For even a couple who's doing well in their marriage right now, the power in just reaffirming that we are not going to allow divorce to be our answer. Now, all of you who are not married and you're scared to death, cohabitation's not the answer either. And I think maybe that's why so many people resort to, we're just going to live together. We're going to try this out. We're going to see how compatible we are. We're going to see how well we deal with each other. And then if things go well, great. But if they don't, we can just kind of walk away and there's no big mess. That's not the answer either. And that's what I want you to know. If you are listening to this morning, whether you're married or not married, I want you to know that there are way better answers than what the world offers. The world offers us divorce when it doesn't work and cohabitation when you're afraid to make a commitment. That's what the world offers us, and I want us to know that there are much better answers. Now, for us to be convinced of that And for us to operate with that, we got to do a good job teaching this. Which means in our churches, we need to be teaching on this regularly. And in our homes, we need to be teaching our children this. And in our marriages, we need to be reminding ourselves of these truths regularly so that we always know there's a better answer than what the world has to offer. Even in our conversations, I think about the people around us. You know, why this idea might come into our mind, because maybe there are people in our family who are divorcing. Or they're just living with somebody and it seems to be working out okay with them. Or perhaps there's somebody that we work with. Or maybe there's somebody that we're friends with. And they're looking to the world for answers. I want us to be able to have conversations with them. And say, you know what? There's a better answer. There's a better way than what you're contemplating. There's a better way than what you're doing. But if we're going to have those conversations in our homes and in our relationships, then we got to be pretty set on what marriage really is. And so what I want to do with you this morning, I just want to share with you three very fundamental, very foundational things about marriage. Three things. That's it. And so here's the first one. The first one is that marriage belongs to God. And this is important because if we understand that it belongs to God, we understand that it's not mine to change. It's not mine to change. It's not yours to change. It's not for any man to change because it belongs to God. So I want you to think about this. I want you to just imagine that you have invited me over to your house. And when I come into your house, I immediately go into your living room and I start rearranging the furniture. I just take it upon myself and I decide this piece would probably look better over here. And this piece would be better over here. And this piece, I don't even know what you were thinking. It just needs to go all together. Would you think I had just absolutely lost my mind? It's okay to say yes. You would have lost your mind if you come in. So heads up, if you ever invite me to your house, I won't do it. But if I do, you have the right to say you've lost your mind. You can even ask me to leave after you feed me. So, as silly as that is, do we understand that when something doesn't belong to us, it's not within our right to do whatever we want to do with it? Now, we participate in marriage, but marriage belongs to God, which means it's not mine. Now, men do. Court decisions happen all the time that say, well, marriage can look like this or marriage can do this. It doesn't matter what men do. Because it doesn't belong to men, it belongs to God. It always has and it always will. I think that's the point, or a point, I think, that Jesus makes in Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19, beginning in verse 3, it says, some Pharisees came to Jesus testing him and asking him, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason at all? I want you to stop right there and think for just a minute. There were people in the time of Jesus, just like people right now, who I think love the idea of the marriage relationship, but they also like the idea of some pretty loose restrictions. In other words, I want to be able to marry, but I also want to be able to get out of it if it doesn't work out the way that I want it to. And I think maybe that's kind of the basis for this question. Some people are wondering, can we just end our marriage for any reason? Now, pick up in verse 4, and he answered and said, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female and said, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. I want you to notice some things. That when Jesus starts answering this question, I want you to see what Jesus is not concerned with. You realize that Jesus is not concerned with what's happened in the past? Now, he'll go on to talk about some things that happened in the time of Moses. Jesus was not concerned about what had happened previously. And you recognize Jesus is also not concerned about the popular opinion of the day. There is an answer that Jesus can give to this question that would have probably been popular. But he wasn't concerned about the popular answer, and Jesus is not concerned about the rabbis' teaching of the day. They had their favorite rabbis,
And they have this rabbi says this and this rabbi says that. Jesus is not concerned. Do you see that? When Jesus answers their question, it's not about what's happened in the past. It's not about what's currently being taught from this rabbi or that rabbi. And it's not about being popular. Jesus says, if you want to know the answer to the marriage questions, then here's who you have to go to. You have to go back to God. And notice Jesus emphasizes here and again later, just beyond this text, he'll use that phrase, from the beginning. Do you see Jesus making that point that marriage belongs to God? If you want to know the answer to the marriage question, then go to God. Because the very one that created you is the same one that created the marriage relationship. That means it belongs to him and he's the one who governs that. And here's what Jesus says. Jesus says that the marriage relationship from the beginning was meant to be between a man and a woman. And it was meant to be joined together by God, and it was not meant to be separated. And so Jesus says when there are questions about marriage, we don't look to the world, we don't look to the past, we look to God. Do you see how important that is if we're thinking about the marriage foundation? You gotta start here that it belongs to God. And I also just want to note quickly, there are a lot of questions that Jesus could have given the same answer for. Like if somebody would have come to him and said, Jesus, is it okay for a man to marry another man? Well, Jesus could have said no. Think back to the beginning. Think about the original intention. Think about God's original design. Jesus could have said no. It's not okay for a man to marry another man because God never intended marriage to be that way. And somebody could have come to him and said, Jesus, there's a girl I like. But I'm a little bit unsure about her. I'd kind of like to live with her. I kind of want to enjoy the benefits of the marriage relationship, but I'm afraid to make a commitment. So what if we just kind of just see each other and live together on a trial basis? Would that be okay? And you know Jesus could say, no. I want you to think back to the beginning. God is joining together, and what has been joined together is not meant to be separated. And so that's the first fundamental thing when we're thinking about marriage. It's got to start there, that marriage belongs to God. Second is that God hates divorce. You remember in the beginning I made you say divorce is not the answer. And when we get out of here, you're going to look at your husband, you're going to look at your wife, and you're going to have that conversation, one of those two, and you're going to say divorce is not going to be our answer. Why? It's because God hates divorce. Now, why does God hate divorce? And I think there are a couple of reasons. For one, it's just contrary to His design. Remember what we just said? That God had an ideal for marriage. God had an original design for marriage. So you can imagine when marriage doesn't go according to the design, you can imagine God dislikes that for sure, right? But I think there's something even stronger. When you think about, well, why does God hate divorce? And I think the answer lies in Malachi chapter 2. In Malachi chapter 2, God's people are doing a lot of things wrong. And one thing that they were doing wrong is it seems as if they were being pretty flippant about their marriages. But there's some language in Malachi chapter 2 that I think really helps us understand why God hates divorce. Let's look at it. Verse 14, yet you say for what reason? Because the Lord has been a witness between you and the wife of your youth against whom you have dealt treacherously, though she is your companion and your wife by covenant. So do you see some important words in the language here? I want you to notice that the Lord has been a witness. In a minute we're going to look at that word covenant, but you have dealt treacherously, though she is your companion and wife by covenant. Verse 15, but no one has done so who has a remnant of the Spirit. And what did that one do while he was seeking a godly offspring? Take heed then to your spirit, and let no one deal treacherously against the wife of your youth, for I hate divorce, says the Lord, the God of Israel, and him who covers his garment with wrong, says the Lord of hosts. So take heed to your spirit, so that you do not deal treacherously. Do you get the idea that they are dealing treacherously with their marriages? And it's in that text where we get that statement, God hates divorce. But I think we understand it when we see some of these words, especially notice back to the end of verse 14, that she is not just your companion, but she is a wife by covenant. I think covenant is an important word that helps us understand why God hates divorce. Have you ever noticed, just studying the Bible, that God is really serious about covenants? I think that's one of the important things about studying the Old Testament, is because there's all this covenant language and covenant making, and you come to understand that God is pretty serious about covenants. Do you realize that our entire relationship with God is based on a covenant? Do you realize that the reason you're here this morning is because your hope in God rests on the fact that you trust Him to keep His covenant? Do you see that? Do you see the whole, our whole response to God, our faith, our hope, it all rests on this trust that God keeps His end of the covenant. And now, if you expect God to keep His end of the covenant, shouldn't there be the expectation that you'll keep your end of the covenant too? And what this seems to be saying is when we enter into that marriage covenant, when we without God-given reason in that covenant, and that's important because there is a reason for divorce. It's infidelity. It was on that initial list. I don't want to overlook that. There is a God-given reason for divorce. But the point is, when you break that covenant and there is no God-given reason for it, you now have angered God. Do you see that? What if God didn't hold up His end of the covenant? How would you feel about that? How would you feel if God says, well, I know this is what I said, and I know this is what I promised, I know this is what I offered, but I've changed my mind because this didn't work out the way that I wanted it to, and so I'm just going to do something else. Do you see how you might be a little angry at that? Where you just kind of throw up your hands and you thought, well, I thought we had a deal. Do you see the importance of covenants? That's what I want you to see. And that's why God hates divorce, is because divorce is a breaking of a covenant. And covenants either mean something or they don't. And when we deal treacherously with our marriages, when we just haphazardly get into a covenant and then break it, that's not favorable towards God, is it? Just like it wouldn't be favorable towards us if God did not hold up His end of the bargain either. So I'm going to go back to something that I said in the very beginning. That when trouble comes into our marriages, those are real challenges. No denying that. But I want you to understand that marriages that stay together don't stay together because they've been easy. I want to just a show of hands here. Do we have any couples here that have been married for over 30 years? Okay, over 40 years? Do we have an over 50 years here? Yeah, we do. Now, you don't have to answer this out loud, but you can just acknowledge with a nod or a no. Has your marriage lasted 30 or 40 or 50 years because it was always easy? I'm seeing a lot of no's here. It's not because it was always easy. You remember one of the reasons why people said they got divorced was unrealistic expectations. And so we have to know, when we enter into a marriage relationship, that there are going to be challenges. And it might end up in some ways not being exactly what you expected, or you may encounter some things that you never expected to encounter. But when things get hard, when things get challenging in the marriage, it's not time to start looking for a way out. It's time to work harder. That's how marriages survive. When things get hard, you just have to work harder. And I think about the unrealistic expectations, and I think about our marriage ceremonies, and I'm wondering if in our marriage vows, we need to change those a little bit and start saying something like, you know that on this day, you are committing yourself to live with this imperfect person for the rest of your life. How's that for an inspiring wedding ceremony? Cody, take notes. Those need to be in the vows. You need to look at Macy and say, you're stuck with me for life, and I got a lot of problems. You don't have to end that part. But that's the expectation that you have to have, right? Is that you are joining yourselves. God is joining you with this person, and there are going to be some difficulties. That's the point. It's not somber marriage ceremonies. It's entering into marriage with the right expectations. Perhaps that's where so many marriages have fallen off the rails. And here's our last point. Here's the third foundation. The expectations are high. Here's the text that we read. I doubt you can read that from a distance. You might not even read it if you're really close. That's Ephesians 5, 22 through 33. I'm not going to read that again because that was read just before the lesson. But I just put it back up here as a reference for you. And here's why I read this text. Here's why I come to this text. Is to make this point that the expectations are high. You see, you can go through this text in Ephesians chapter 5 and you can teach specifically, well, here's what a husband is supposed to do and here's what a wife is supposed to do. And we need to do that. We need to be teaching the specifics because the Bible has a lot to say specifically about what a husband does and what a wife does. That's just beyond the scope of our lesson this morning. I come to Ephesians 5 because what I want you to see is that the marriage standard is high. And what I mean by that is that marriage is more than just personal satisfaction. It's more than just romance. It's more than just feelings. Cody and Jim were talking a couple of days ago, and I mentioned that I'm preaching on marriage, and somehow it came up that I'm not even talking about love in a foundational sermon on marriage. And they looked at me like my head fell off. And Cody said, so your sermon's incomplete. Yeah, I guess it is. Now, love is obviously littered throughout here, and Ephesians 5 gives us a real definition of love in a marriage. And what it does say is it's not all about the romance. And it's not all about the feelings. Love is so much deeper than that. And that's why I bring your mind to this text this morning. When we're laying the foundation about marriage, what we need to understand is that it's more than just personal satisfaction and it's more than just romance. You remember that first screen? There were some hints to a lack of certain things, and that led to divorce. Do you ever hear people, when they're talking about a failed marriage, do you hear people say, well, I just didn't get anything out of it anymore? Do you ever hear people say, well, we just fell out of love? You hear that, right? And that might be a good reason to end your marriage if that's what marriage was all about. But you understand from a text like Ephesians 5 that that's not what marriage is all about. Marriage is much more than just your own personal satisfaction. Marriage is much more than what you get out of it. Marriage is so much more about the other person. Do you see why this is so foundational? Why this is so important when we're thinking about marriage, when we're teaching about marriage, when we're having conversations with our friends and our family, people that are struggling in our marriage? You got to come here. And you've got to emphasize that marriage is about more than just my own satisfaction. So this text says, husbands, you've got a huge responsibility, and it doesn't have anything to do with your own satisfaction. And it doesn't really even have anything to do with romance. It says that you've got to be like Christ is to the church. It says that you've got to be a spiritual leader. Husbands, you've got to be protectors. You've got to be providers. You've got to see to the needs of another person just like you see to your own needs. Do you see how that's a pretty high standard? And how it's not about just you. you've got another person that you're responding to. And that just heightens the level of responsibility, doesn't it? You've got another person in which you have a supreme concern about. And the needs of that person go before your very own needs. Now, here's a newsflash. Men, you may not always understand her needs. That ever happened before? Yeah. I don't know why this is so important to her, but if it is, I can't dismiss that, right? I don't know why Hallmark movies are such a thing, but they are. And so what I've learned is you got to watch them, but you can't talk about them, even if you know the plot within the first 5 minutes. Okay, we got to understand there's somebody else that God has joined with you. And you meet those needs like you would meet your very own. That's the expectation. And wives, you don't get off the hook either. And it's not easy from the wife's standpoint because you've got to subject yourself to an imperfect person. And that can't be easy. But that's what God calls you to do. Do you see how, wives? It's not all about love and romance and feelings. It's about ordering yourself the way that God says. That's what He says. It's as obey or submit to your husbands as to the Lord. In other words, the way that you would submit, that your subjection to your husband is a direct reflection on your relationship with God. And the same is true for husbands. The way that you treat your spouse, that is a direct relation, a reflection with a relationship with God. Does that make the point? That marriage is, the expectation is high. So, let's wrap all this up. These are the foundations that marriage has to be based on. These are the truths that every marriage decision needs to be based on. Every decision that you make in your marriage needs to be based on this foundation. Every conversation you have, every teaching that you do about marriage has to be based on these fundamental truths. And when we base our decisions and our conversations on these fundamental truths, we're a whole lot less likely to let that worldly mindset creep into our minds. That's the importance of knowing these fundamentals about marriage. Now, we haven't said anything really about the salvation of our souls, but we don't ever want to leave without giving somebody an opportunity to think very soberly and very seriously about their relationship with God. You remember earlier we talked about covenants? And God says, I will be your God and you will be my people. We don't have time to talk about the magnitude of what it means to belong to God, for Him to be our God, for Him to be our sustainer, for Him to be our protector, for Him to be our provider. But that's what God promises. He says you can belong to Him, but it's based on your obedience to Him. So maybe there's somebody here this morning who used to be obedient to God, but for whatever reason you're not. Now is a perfect opportunity to come back. God allows us to do that. Isn't that awesome? That God allows us to do that even if we've broken a covenant with God in the past. God allows us, through His forgiveness, God allows us to be His people again. Maybe this morning you need to just come forward and say, I need to belong to God again. I'm ready to belong to God again. I'm getting my life back on track and I need you to pray for me, or I need you to know these things. Maybe you've never obeyed God and maybe you don't know exactly what that would entail. Now's a good time to start asking questions. Maybe you know exactly what it means. Maybe you already know what confession means and what baptism means and what it represents. Maybe you already know all that stuff. You've just never done it before. If you know all of that and you've never done that before, you need to be doing that right now. And so as we sing this song, lies an opportunity for you to make your life right with God.
If you want to take advantage of that, you can come to the front while we stand and sing.